Welcome to the iCoder Podcast with Ian McDuff.
Hello once again, podcast and ODR audience, and welcome to another in the series of the ODR podcasts. I'm Ian McDuff, your host, and I am happy to be speaking with you from Wellington in Aotearoa, New Zealand. In this conversation, I'm delighted to be joined by my colleague in the global ODR network, Dr. Irene Sigismondi. Welcome, Irene. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Irene is a practicing lawyer qualified at the Libera Università Internazionale di Studi Sociali Guido Carli, and then subsequently with a doctorate in law and information technology from La Sapienza in Rome. And Irene is a contract teacher at La Sapienza and told me just before we came on air that she's teaching primarily in the sort of sociology of law, introduction to law area, which of course intrigues me, and we may have to come back to that. What I will do, listeners and Irene, is I'll put a more detailed CV on the link to the podcast later so we don't take up too much time. But I do need to tell you that Irene has been a visiting fellow at the Yale Center for Internet Studies, a researcher for the Italian National Council of Research at the Institute for Judicial Studies, visiting professor at a number of places, including Sorbonne and Bologna, and has worked with the Department of Innovation and Digital Transformation, which I think our listeners might be interested to hear about, if you are able to say something about that. I understand your work has focused primarily on the sort of the interface of law and technology and digital justice. So we've got a number of things to explore, including legal education, because one of the things I gather that you are keen on is education in technology and internet information technology for lawyers. So welcome to the podcast. I look forward to this conversation. Good to see you.
Okay, Jan, thank you so much. And thank you for having me in the podcast series. It is a great pleasure and a great honor for me. You introduced me quite fancily. The real thing is that I am passionate about information technology and law, and I sprinkled it all over my research, academic, and professional life. So that is the overarching effect of this knowledge and this passion.
A question arises for me out of that, Irene. I can understand that passion. I can see it in the work you've done. What is your impression of the reception in the legal profession and the judiciary? I mean, you're the enthusiast, but at the judicial level and the legal professional level, has there been a positive reception to this work? And well, you've referred to digital transformation and the digital humanities and the interface of law, technology, and justice. How has that been received?
Well, this is a very interesting point, because Italy is a conservative structure. We have a lot of tradition that comes, dates back to the Romans. So we do have a problem with technology, but we got a compromise, in part because it was necessary to achieve the funding by European Community in the recovery funds, and in part because it was the new generation that called for something like that. So we needed to upgrade our understanding of law and legal technologies. Mm-hmm. And the newer generation are more keen to do that. Cool. And more open to make it happen. So this is important, both in the judiciary and among the practicing lawyers, the attorneys, the everyday court world. What is not so much accepted is the fact that sometimes technology means come back to written law. Like, sure, we need to write the memories, to write memorandums, to file documents. And this is not so in compliance with our procedural code, which is all about speaking, making it clear by talking to each other, both in the civil law and, I mean, in civil litigation and in criminal trials.
Oh, okay. Do you see that the digital technology can help bridge that gap, or is it an obstacle? Okay.
I see it, and I see in perspective that this is going to happen because we have the possibility to mix a little more the use of written legal documents and hearings over some technological means.
Right.
So once we bypassed, because we overcome the problem by using all the digital signatures and the cryptation and the encryption and all the system that protects the authenticity of the transaction, we can go and move forward and have the trial online. So use the rooms that ODR can provide as actual trial rooms.
Yeah. Thinking about that, what happened in Italy during the pandemic when, you know, in most countries we were forced to, if the courts were to continue, we had to go online. What was the position? Because Italy was one of the first, if not the first, of the European nations to be struck with COVID. And so very early on, changes would have to happen.
Yes, we had kind of two tracks, one for civil litigation that went in a direction of reinforcing the so-called processo telematico, so the trial that goes over the exchange of documents encrypted with all the, you know, deadlines for the trial respected and hearings bypassed by memories, memorandums, and facts. And the criminal trial, which was sort of a little controversial because the Ministry of Justice used Microsoft Teams, which is not compliant with our code of digital transformation, the Codice dell'Amministrazione Digitale, the Digital Administration Code, which states that we need to prefer open software and not proprietary software.
Right.
But that was an emergency, so it is a quick solution and secure before entering into a regular tender to get the light provider. And there was no time. And we needed to preserve a little bit of orality and the fair trial due process, but in terms of actual acting and performing of the parties. It was difficult, but it turned out to be good.
Yeah.
At the end of the story, more for criminal part than for civil part. But this is a personal opinion, because I should interview more of colleagues in terms of both attorneys and judges to check what they think.
And then I'll come back to you for the second interview to see where that's up to. But one of the things, or a number of examples that have come up in earlier podcasts of, for example, small claims tribunals and police courts and traffic courts and those administrative tribunals in many cases, has that been the experience in Italy as well?
Well, we have a sort of a speedy trial, and nowadays with the new reform of a so-called CAPTABIA, our at the time Ministry of Justice and formerly President of the Constitutional Court, that has speed up the situation for procedural reasons. So we have deadlines and accepted terms of speed for the trial. in terms of technology that supports litigation for small claims or administrative claims or, you know, small value, high volume kind of controversies, to my perception, we don't really have a different approach. We have just a different court, which is more ready for that kind of claims. So,
yeah, okay. Yeah, and can you say something also, I mentioned this in the introduction, the Department of Innovation and Digital Digital Transformation, this is a government department?
Yes.
Yeah.
It is a spin-off of the council presidency.
Mm-hmm.
So for the past legislature, we have the ministry. For the present legislation, we have an undersecretary. But apart from these political distinctions and bureaucratic distinctions, the role of this office, this department, is to foster digital innovation in the different domains of public administration.
Okay.
So we have the task of the particular office where I was legal drafting, which is another love of my life. It is important to express correctly and to get some kind of standardization, standard in making it clear that the law is saying something. So we work on the text to achieve the meaning. So what is behind the pure text? Because the text is subject to interpretation. But if you come back and use the same model over and over, somebody who reads that kind of text would recall to its memory, to his or her memory, what it is all about. I mean, that is the goal of such an office.
Okay.
The work is difficult because it has to do with both the great goal and both the minimal differences. You put the comma, you don't put it, you put the end, you put the or. All about algorithms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but well, it's always been the case in law, hasn't it? Is the words matter, and you have to get it right, and perhaps all the more so now because there's a kind of democratization of access to legal information. And one of the aims of the digital transformation is that democratization of access, which means that.
Differently.
Yeah, okay.
If I may.
Please.
The concept I would use is disintermediation.
Sure, which okay.
Is not exactly democratization because we don't get to actually write the law unless we're talking about contracts, because we can make our interests to the point that they don't stress others' interests or the public interest. But in terms of accessing the law and legal resources, we are kind of left free to browse, and we don't have intermediaries. It's like in healthcare.
Yeah.
We do a lot of self-help. In legal area, legal domain, we do a lot of self-help. And this is not the best that we can have, because contrary to democracy, which is a value, and we will defend it strongly against all attacks, this intermediation is not always the best case, because the fact that I did, you know, 20, 30 years of studies in the law makes me in a different point of view from somebody who's got the problem with, you know, a neighbor and needs to go to court for that problem.
Yeah.
We find information. I know I have a right, and it's my right to do so. But disintermediating law from lawyers means that you get to hit the wall sooner or later, because the lawyer, the attorney or the judge or the consultant makes it clear that you can choose a pattern and you can stay on that pattern to achieve your interest, being lawful, being accepted by the legal order. I don't know if I made it clear.
No, absolutely. And I think the distinction you draw, I mean, my terminology, the democratization, I can see your clear point about that. It's not the same as the disintermediation. And I think your term is by far preferable. But that also, as you point out, has its consequences, because it's a bit like the medical profession know that every patient they see has already consulted Dr. Google. And if they don't like the opinion that Dr. Google gives them, they'll just go to somewhere else until they find one that they like, which perhaps is more of an issue with medical or health issues online than it might be with law. But a question does arise for me about this, which certainly has been a concern for us here in New Zealand, which is to the extent that people will access legal information, something approaching legal information online, that assumes everybody does have access, and that the problem that at least some of our one particular government department here is dealing with is the inequalities of access. And is that something that has been dealt with in Italy, where we know that the cost, remoteness, lack of infrastructure, lack of technological expertise, competence, are those issues that, for example, the department you work with has been addressing?
Yes. There are several projects that are going into the direction of democratization, and this I should agree with you, of access to legal resources. Mm-hmm. So we have accessible all the legal assets of Italy in terms of Parliament and regional laws and all ministerial decrees and stuff. All of that is accessible. We have a few projects that open up jurisprudence to the knowledge of anybody, given that we have the privacy compliance. Like, I can understand what happened in the case of X versus Y, but except X, I don't know who is, and I shouldn't be able to understand who that person is.
Yeah.
Apart from big cases involving, you know, Berlusconi or whoever.
just to think of a name, perhaps.
Just that.
Just a random name. Yeah.
Apart from that, no one should be able to link the case to the person. But
sure,
that is part of our privacy culture, which is not really in sync with the celebrity culture that is spreading also all over Italy.
Yeah.
We want to be known. We want the intimate part of us to be shown up.
Although I do recall watching TV in Italy on occasion when I was living there on occasion, and there's so much by way of the celebrity culture. And but we weren't going to comparing TV cultures, because I don't imagine it's any better anywhere else. But one of the things you've just touched on, though, reminds me of what you've commented on in your biographical notes, is an interest in ethics and technology. And you nod in agreement there. What are the top-of-mind ethical issues that you've confronted in the research or the work you've been doing with government departments or in your teaching or in your practice? Because I mean, the issue at the moment is things like ChatGPT and the ethics of AI and et cetera. What's top of mind for you in this area?
We have a huge debate about that. And it is always very difficult to be concise and synthetic in what the many facets of this problem. I put it in my focus for the short video that I shared with you, because I always try to put myself in the shoes of the user, the end user of technology. And what is in his head or her head? What are they looking for when they use technology? And are they aware of what's in the black box that works for them? Like, you know, we ask an information and we don't know how we are going to pay for that information with our personal data. So it is more of a lifelong education that goes from the very beginning of our university academic training to the very beginning, and then goes on, of the professional life. I want to make my students aware of what are the risks behind the technology use and some sort of, are you aware that it's like the question that the judge makes to a testimony. You know that what you say can be used against you. You know that what you're going to start doing will eventually stay forever around. Are you aware of that? That is the final consideration that we are doing. And this is very heavy in perception. Then there is the other part of it. So from the side of technology itself and its evolution, how important is to stir technology, to have it addressing some kind of problems or other kind of problems? And, inevitably, we think that for the first time concerning artificial intelligence, the big players are asking the President of the United States to sit down together and to think of something to control, which would be something unacceptable from the perspective of freedom of research. But we need to be sure that this thing is not going to come back to us.
Yeah.
Limit our freedom. I like a lot the filter bubble thing, because that is not a problem of technology itself or the evolution of technology, but it's a problem related to how we use it and we understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And to shuffle, it is so much important to shuffle the users to make critical thinking always present.
Yeah. There's so many elements of this to unpack, but one of the threads that runs through my listening to your comments is the issue of trust. And I was just reading a story in the article in the New York Times a day or so ago about a lawyer who had used ChatGPT to prepare his submissions in a case against an airline. And it turned out that ChatGPT just made it all up. It was mostly fictional. The cases did not exist. The courts did not exist. And ChatGPT had invented it. I mean, you could probably do this yourself, and listeners can subsequently do it. Ask ChatGPT about yourself. And some of it will be accurate and some of it will be just wildly fictional. And what that means is, you know, again, with the possibility of AI-created photographs or stories or whatever it might be, is what we're dealing with is a real issue of trust at a social level, which presumably is something that you would address in your sociology courses for the students at La Sapienza. But trust in the legal process, that we can't assume that by relying on the objective processes, and I put that in quotation marks, of artificial intelligence, that what you've got is something that is trustable. And that becomes a real barrier in legal systems, doesn't it?
You know, I shiver when I think about that, because it is so new and so overwhelming. November, we're speaking in May, just a few months, and we're just so aware that this is big.
Yep.
I tend to say, give me time to make an opinion in my head because it is so new.
Yeah. Have
an opinion. What I can say is already outdated. It refers to something that was happening in November when I had my courses on first semester. So I have to prepare it for next year. And next year is going to be very different. We were, you know, thinking about deep fake. And that was already given and that was already accepted. You accepted that what you have in front is realistic, which is different from real.
Isn't it?
And in law, we have some similar thing because we have two positions and we need to find out what is the more reasonable to the legal domain.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily the more just. So we have similar problems since no problem about that. We know that in Latin we have this wonderful saying that says summum ius summa iniuria. Mm-hmm. Like if you apply the law to its perfect extent, to its maximum extent, it will be the maximum tort you get. Because you always have to tailor to the situation. What is reasonable is not necessarily the real just application, pure law. It is a solution to live in peace. Me cives ad arma. Not to make the citizen go to gut.
Yeah.
Second amendment problem for US. But yes, we don't want to talk about that. Just to say that we have recursive problems.
Yep.
But the nature, the extent, the quantity, and the quality of what is happening in front of us is so much bigger than we expected. That I am
speechless. Which reinforces one of the things you've also commented on in your bio, which is the importance of lifelong learning, because the stuff that you and I are talking about, well, certainly when my law school days go back a little bit earlier than yours, but none of this was an issue. It just was never in our imagination. So everything that I do now has nothing to do with the stuff that I learned at law school, admittedly starting sometime in the middle of last century. So we cannot imagine the kind of transformations that will take place in the next 10 or 15 or 20 years, which means that what happens in legal education, legal practice, is going to have to really keep running quite fast to keep up, even if not getting ahead. So in your job in the business of legal education is a challenging and not an enviable one to keep up with the impact of these technological developments.
Yes. Yes, and you know, what I am proud of is that I'm not actually doing legal education to lawyers.
Yeah.
I am doing the training to the lawyers and the legal education to sociologists. So it is an opening, a mind opening and a contamination, because we need to be more in this time of misintermediation. We need to be more aware of what is not our domain. We need to know a little bit of healthcare, a little bit of law care, a little bit of technology care. It all has to do with our capacity of using technology without being used, or to be used at an acceptable extent.
Well, I am about to say, because we all know that we go online and do digital searches, we know we are also being used. But it's not as transparent as it might be. I mean, the transparency issue is also related to the trust issue, isn't it? We don't know what is.
It's a black box.
Yep.
We don't need to know what is the black box, what is inside it, unless an accident happens. If there is an accident, then we have to open it up and explain it. So transparency is a tricky concept because we need to know that there is, but we don't need to know actually how it works technically. Sometimes the students ask me, why don't we talk about at the beginning of the course, I don't know, big bytes, how the computer is set, how memory works, the RAM, the ROM, whatever. And then at the end of the course, they say, oh, you know, I did a technical school and you touch everything concerning technology, IT, everything else. But I never did what you are doing. And this helps a lot in my formation, in my moving towards my future profession.
Yeah.
So this is a challenge. The transparency and trust needs to be known to just to the extent that we are able to.
Yeah. No, I take that point entirely. Is you know, I'm like you, I'm sitting in front of a computer here, and I don't need to know how it works, or I don't need to know a lot about how it works, but I need to know enough about what the consequences of my being a user of that technology might be, and what the impact is on my life, or the impact of my using it on other people's lives. And hence the, you know, the conversations that are taking place now about the impact on, say, teenage girls of excessive use of things like TikTok or Instagram. We need to know what the social consequences are of our using the black boxes, but we don't need to know all the technological details of how these things actually operate as much as I'd like to. So, but that's where,
misunderstanding that. To talk about technology means to talk about technicalities. No, it's not the same.
Absolutely. So it's what you referred to before as the digital humanities. And it's what this means for us as human beings to be using this technology, and how it may enhance our lives, or the points at which it doesn't enhance our lives. I mean, of course, that's a movable feast. We're constantly being challenged about the ways in which it may not enhance our lives. Yeah. You know, I go to a cafe and see three people who are having coffee together, but actually they're not. They're all on their phones. You know, so, but those are common features.
The point is not that three adults have their coffee while scrolling down their phones. The problem is a family that has his meal while the little kid on the big chair scrolls the iPad or the phone from his mother, father, and mother, father are not taking care of the kid.
Yeah.
That is really traumatic for the future.
I've seen that arising over the last 10 years, as you no doubt have, as a way of the child being so pacified is to hand the child a phone, and rather than going for a walk in the woods. But anyway, that takes us into a different area of childcare, which
it still stays under the umbrella ethics and technology, educational technology, whatever.
Interesting question there, because we've had. The founder of ChatGPT talking to Congress lately about how there's a greater need for regulation. But it does go back to one of the things we touched on briefly before, which is if there is going to be regulation, which it seems there needs to be, where does that come from? And it's always been a question, certainly when I was teaching ethics in law school in Singapore, there was always the question when you dealt with ethics and regulation in industry. There was the argument from industry that they can regulate themselves, and the tech industry will argue that they can regulate themselves, or they promise to do better, certainly in terms of the dangerous things that may happen on digital platforms. Have you formed a view, or are you forming a view, as to what the best source of regulation is? It something that is top down, or is it a tripartite exercise? How does this happen?
Yes, I can have a semi-short answer to that, because within the master course at La Sapienza, there is a module on ISO and the standardization. And we are studying how technical norms and legal norms are, you know, having different patterns of a democratic approach, like top down, bottom up, or similar simplification. Now the regulation concerning technology starts to be less right approach based and more risk approach based, which kind of plays reversely from consequences. So that is kind of the trend I see. I am not entirely aware of how this will work and what are the consequences of that. But I see the trend, and I see it also openly described by our legislature at the European Union level. Mm-hmm. You know, when they do the visionary documents, strategic approach documents, they say it. We need a risk-based approach because technology is good. We need to be prepared on when it goes wrong. Something unwanted happens. Yeah. So risk-based approach can save us heavy heat on the wall.
Professional question for and where you are at La Sapienza. Do you find you've got a group of good and like-minded colleagues who are interested in the same questions? Are you able to have lunch together or have little seminars together? Is there a group at La Sapienza who are like you working in this area, or is it you're on your own?
In the master course? In the master course, there are plenty of contract teachers.
Yep.
And with them, we have a few meetings that the director does online. So it is nice because there is an exchange and stuff. Personally, I have a few contamination colleagues that I like to stalk just to have some how to or tell me the behind the scenes. And it is very nice to have these kind of random conversations. We don't have a structured place or time to do that, but we do.
But you have some co-conspirators. People you can work with. Well, I mean, it seems to me from this conversation, Elena, that you are a very important part of what's happening and is going to happen in the Italian legal system and in education, whether it's education, you know, training for lawyers or training for other groups of sociologists. So it's reassuring to me and no doubt to our listeners to know that that you're there and that you're doing this work. So I do appreciate that information, but I'm aware of the time as well, and it's probably this time we wound down and signed off. So, but is there any observation about where you see this going that you'd like to round off this conversation with? Anything that I haven't asked you? What have I not asked you?
I think it is fine. I think we touched several points. And
I hope so.
I did make my positions, if not clear, at least visible to some
both,
extent.
Both clear and visible. So, I mean, I do appreciate that. So with that, we probably should wind down. It just all I can say is thank you so much for taking the time. I do appreciate that because I've no doubt you will move now into a very busy day at La Sapienza. So thank you for taking the time. And should we make it to Rome next year, then I'll make sure I'll call by and see you.
This podcast has been brought to you by ICODER, the International Council for Online Dispute Resolution. To learn more about ICODER or to become a supporting member, please visit our website at icodr.org.